Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator. This is episode 13 of Art for Your Ear, and I'm so happy to say that it's supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Today I am talking to Portland-based painter and my lovely friend, Lisa Golightly. When I emailed Lisa to ask if she'd do this with me, I was actually stunned that she said yes. She has a slight case of phone phobia, as do I, for real. So we decided to record this episode in the evening over a cocktail. And so, of course, please feel free to pour yourself a little glass of something while you listen. Everything that we're about to talk about is on my site right now, thejealouscurator.com, if you'd like to see what we're talking about while we're talking about it. Okay, dialing the number, the scariest part, but in spirit of doing something that scares you, I am making the call. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Were you just taking a sip of your wine?
I was taking a sip.
Well, I have my cocktail right here. I think this is going to be a new podcast tradition. So everyone listening, here's the deal. Lisa and I met a few years ago, and it turns out both of us have major phone anxiety.
And, I think it's a thing, you know?
I think it is, actually. But you know what? When I was staying at your place for Girl Crush, right? And I needed a cab downtown, and neither of us wanted to call.
I was like, I can do it online. You can do it online.
And so that was the first time in my life that I was like, oh, other people don't want to phone people?
Yep.
It was awesome. And so... Well, first of all, I'm pretty proud of myself for having a podcast because I have to phone someone every time.
I don't actually believe that you have phone anxiety.
Okay, here's the thing. How are you, though, once you get on the phone? Fine?
Fine.
Yeah, same.
It's the dialing, yeah.
Same here. Like, I will not order pizza.
Really?
No.
I find that so hard to believe. That's so weird.
I know. Well, you're weird, too.
I just mean because you can speak in front of people. You have no problem with that. You have a podcast, for God's sake.
I know. I don't know what it is, but I thought I couldn't believe I actually got you to do this. So I was like, you made a joke about, well, I'll have to have a glass of wine handy. And I was like, yes, do it. So
I wasn't joking.
Oh.
I was like, no, I will be drinking.
I thought you were joking, and I was like, don't joke, pour some wine. Well, I'm not a big wine drinker, so I was like, what should I bring? No. So I was like, who doesn't love a little Malibu circa 1992? So that's what I'm doing.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think...
I'm not alone.
No, you're not alone. We're both anxious about being on a... phone call, and we both have alcohol, so I think it's going to turn out great.
It could turn out great, or not so great.
Or only you and I will think it's funny. Actually, maybe everyone at home should pour a drink right now, too, so that it seems more entertaining to you as well. I actually did a little drinking game by accident on my first ever podcast that I did with Martha Rich, because when I listened to it back, I said, that's amazing, I think 9 times.
And I didn't notice that.
Oh, my God. And so that I said in my little write-up on my site, I said, and if you want to make it really interesting, take a shot every time I say, that's amazing.
Oh,
so I'm working. I'm going to try not, even though you and your work are amazing, I'm going to try really hard to keep that in check. Otherwise, this Malibu is going to be gone. I do.
Your thing to say.
Yeah. And I was, when I was listening back to the Bob Novogratz one, I said, he was telling some great story. And I said, that's fantastic.
you have your list of alternative phrases.
That I can't really, I don't know. Amazing is just my go-to. So on that note, let's get to you and your amazing work. I'm trying to decide if I want to do the speed round first. I think I'm going to do the speed round first. And then we'll get into talking about your work. Huh? Take another swig of wine.
Get ready.
Okay. Now, these, you're just meant to answer as fast as you can. And if they lead to other things, great. Ready? Would you or would you not order a pizza on the phone? you would. I thought you would.
Strangely, I am. Yeah. See, our deal in our family, though, is I call it in and the husband picks it up. So.
See, I thought you were going to say that you ordered it online.
No, where we go, you can't do that.
Do you wish that you could?
Yeah. I would do it if you could.
I know.
Yeah. But I'm so lazy that I would rather call it in and he go get it than, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Favorite city to spend a day in?
Oh, geez. Probably Rome.
Ooh, good one. Favorite meal, breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
If I'm eating out, yeah. Dinner.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
live for the first cup of coffee, though. So if that counts as a meal, then the first cup of coffee.
I count that as a meal. I'm so excited for that first cup of coffee in the morning and every day.
I live for it. Oh, yeah.
Every time I have it, I say to my husband, I love coffee so much.
And then I keep having cups, hoping it'll be as good as that first one, and never is.
I know, right?
Never.
Maybe we'll do coffee on the next episode. Converse or high heels?
Converse.
Your favorite guilty pleasure on TV? And be honest. Don't try and sound smart or something.
Well, okay. So I know you. And so I know where you're going with this.
No pressure.
The only TV show that I actually watched live time on the actual television instead of on my computer or like a day later is The Bachelor. That's the only show that I watch, actually.
You do?
On TV. That's the only one I watch live time, yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know that, and I feel closer to you now. Okay, have another drink. Cheers to The Bachelor. Did you know that Caitlin and Sean, the latest Bachelor couple, were 5 minutes from my house?
I saw you said that on Facebook.
Oh my God, they were having lunch.
Were they your friends or something?
My friend owns a winery restaurant that overlooks the lake, and they were there having lunch.
And they didn't call you?
No, it is 5 minutes from my house. I was like, how? How are they in a tiny town in Canada, and nobody felt it necessary to phone me?
You know, I never heard of where you live until you moved there. And now I hear about that area all the time.
Really?
Yeah, the region you're in. Not the town, but the, what's it called? The
Okanagan Valley.
Okanagan. I hear that all the time now.
Oh, it's a beautiful place.
I guess so, because I hear about it.
Yeah. You should come.
Well, it's called Summerland, I mean.
I know. And the town up the road
the
is
land
called...
land of endless summer.
I know. The town up the road is called Peachland. Not even joking. When we first moved here,
on the other side, is there like a Boringville somewhere, or like Depressingville, or
no way, man? It's just all sunshine and peaches over here. When we first moved here, we'd only ever been here in the summer to visit, and when we moved in the winter, and so it was snowy and cold. And my son was six at the time, and he said, "So, in the winter, do they call it Winterland?" Which I thought was pretty smart.
False advertising, Mom.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, it warmed up. Okay, and then my last question. Oh, that was my last question. Oh, no, it wasn't. If you were going to change, I love this question. If you were going to change your name to anything, what would you change it to?
Oh, that's so easy. Because this is a good story. Well, not that good, but Lisa. Because most people don't know this. My legal name is Melissa. But not a single day in my life did my parents call me that. They called me Lisa from the day I was born. And so some legal stuff says Melissa, some says Lisa. It just makes my life so confusing. Like, you have no idea. I keep saying I'm going to legally change it to Lisa because it's just ridiculous that anything says Melissa. But it's a weird thing that I just
haven't done. Why did they do that?
I don't know. My mom named me after a student of hers who was named Melissa, but they called Lisa. So that's the brilliant logic of that.
Oh, dear. Because
it's not a nickname for Melissa. It makes no sense. It drives me nuts.
You should legally change it. Just be done with it.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I'm glad I asked that question. I did not know that.
Yeah, like my high school, everything, my transcript said Lisa, even though that wasn't my name. I mean, it's weird. But like my credit card and birth certificate and all that, same
stuff. So do you get in trouble when it's like passport time and stuff?
No, it's so ingrained of me to sign Melissa, except for like when I'm signing prints or something, that yeah, it's weird. Like
should sign a couple of paintings, Melissa, and they'll be like worth way more because it's your actual name. Next one you do.
Well, it's like it feels like a different person because I've never been called that in my life. It's just weird.
Well,
so we purposely named our kids without nicknames, even though you still give them nicknames, just because it drove me so nuts. But anyway.
I'm so glad I asked that question. I was going to skip it. Now we all know. We know a little extra fact about you. I love the speed round. Okay, now actually let's talk about your work.
Okay.
So what I want to start talking about is, and again, this was something that I didn't know until I think the interview for Creative Block, maybe, or maybe when we did Girl Crush at your place in Portland. But you actually started out in photography.
Yeah, that's what I studied in college.
And did you take any painting classes in college, or did you just focus on photography?
Just the minimal requirements to get a fine art degree. That's it.
Okay, and then I know also that you had, and this is also why you're doing this podcast, because you had a prof tell you, if something scares you, you should do it. And drink wine. Yeah. And drink wine while you're doing
while
it.
Do it.
I don't think he probably said that, but so
it was a she.
What?
It was a she.
Oh, it was a she. I thought that was a he. Well, I'm glad you corrected that too. So she said, do something that scares you. So in your mind, was that painting?
Well, at the time it was about a photography project I was working on, which is really weird because it's so similar to what I do now, but it was color photography, and I took positive color prints, painted on those, and then I used those as the color negative, if this makes sense, and reprinted the color negative of and they were really small, and she's like, why don't you do these really big? And I was like, oh, that's scary. I don't want to paint big, because I wasn't a painter, you know. I was just doing, I think they're just 5x7, just the standard, you know, snapshot size. She's like, well, then that's why you have to do it big. If you're scared of doing it, then you just need to do it big. And so that just always stuck with me, that if it's something that scares you, there's a reason it's scaring you. Mm-hmm. And that you need to look into what that is. And it's probably because it's something you really want, you really need to do. But yeah, so it just always kind of fell into anything after that. I was like, oh, this seems scary. Oh, okay, well, I better do it.
I know. I often think of you. I read that when you sent your interview back for Creative Block, and that really stuck with me. I think I actually had them do it as a pull quote in the book. And so was painting that for you? How did you go from graduating as a photography major and to having a career as a painter?
Yeah, well, painting has kind of always been there. My dad's a painter, and so it was always kind of there in the background. And to me, painting was like the ultimate. And it was scary because I just had so much respect for painting and painters, and it scared me. Photography was something that seemed very accessible and natural to me. It kind of came easier.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just easy for me to do that, and I did it, and kind of like, you know, would kind of half glance over at the painters and the paintings. And then after I graduated, I did photography for a while, but then I had kids and I stopped doing a business I had, and I just started painting for fun because there was no pressure. Mm-hmm. There was no pressure on the outcome of what I was doing, so I kind of let myself do it, and then I was like, oh.
And so what was your first painting? Was it similar, like, you know, like the things that I saw from a few years ago, was it that has morphed into where you are now, or was it completely different than where you were? Like, did you start out just sort of...
Just doing portraits, mostly. I had, you know, kids, and I was like, oh, I'll just paint them.
Mm-hmm.
I have subjects right here, so I just started painting them, and then it's kind of evolved from that.
That's so crazy. And then this is your full-time thing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so awesome. And so do you attribute that to, was it the Etsy boom that you timed perfectly? Or how did you start selling?
You know, I started doing portraits. I started, you know, specifically targeting portraits, because a lot of, you know, most artists will do a portrait if you ask, but no one says, here's a, you know, at the time, right, online, anyway, no one said, here, buy a portrait. So I did that, and then I opened an Etsy store after that, just doing what I wanted to do, and then that grew, and I was able to focus more on that. I was like, oh, people like, you know, these pieces, and they were more fun for me to do, to be mm-hmm. honest. And
so yeah, portraits have to be tricky because
they're very tricky. Yeah,
yeah, because people want to look a certain way, even if they don't actually look like that.
Exactly. Right? I've done a lot of plastic surgery.
Well, I was even doing house portraits for a while there, and I found that tricky. You know, because
really?
People would be
people
like,
see
well,
it differently than, yeah.
Yeah, and they'd be like, we don't like the landscaping in the front, so can you take those trees out and, you know, change the door? And it's just like, what?
I've done that with people's faces. They don't like certain things and they want them changed. I'm like, oh, that's fine, but that doesn't look like that person anymore.
Oh, my God. So do you do them at all anymore?
Not really.
Yeah.
I haven't done any in a while. No.
And so your work now, we just did that show in California at the Bedford in December, and we had lots of your work in that, and it was so beautiful. And all of your work sort of has this hazy summer day, like faded, you know, memory kind of feel. And can you tell me a little bit about where that comes from?
So my work has always kind of dealt with memory. As soon as I had kids, you know, you kind of takes you back to being a kid. And so a lot of my early work was very childhood-based and dealing with what I thought was creating memories with them, but you're also kind of looking back at your own memories at the same time. And so then it's kind of evolved. And then my dad has Parkinson's, and typically with Parkinson's you don't lose your memories, but he kind of does every once in a while. So then it, you know, it really makes you start thinking about what parts of your life fade, and that's worked its way into my work for sure. I did a show right after the Bedford, actually, or maybe it was at the same time, and it was called Fade Away, and the paintings were very faded and kind of barely there, black and white images.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And was that sort of about your dad, or is that
very
where?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I don't use actual images of my family or personal images. It's just, I never do. Whenever I find, you know, I'm like, ooh, that, I should paint that. And I start, it just doesn't work. I have to use found images for whatever reason. They're just too close and too precious when they're actual family images. But they were found images, black and white paintings, and yeah, they were just kind of very washed out, very minimal.
Mm-hmm. I have a few of those prints.
Oh, yeah?
I think so. I have a bunch of little black and white faded out prints from you.
Oh, they might be. Oh, okay.
So, there's a little boy and, well, anyway.
Oh, I might.
You might have thrown some in for me, I think.
I might have thrown some in for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my brother-in-law bought a couple of prints of yours for me for Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he put my mailing address, and so I saw. Yeah, anyway, I was like, oh, I think I know what I'm getting for Christmas. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast, and he won't know that I caught him in the act.
So you knew what you were getting? Did you have to open it in front of him and act surprised?
No. They live on the other side of the country, so I was safe, but. Yeah, but okay. I think I do have some of those. I've got quite a few of your prints, actually. None of them are signed Melissa, mind you, but maybe the next one. And then
I signed Melissa on accident, and I've had to redo it.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I think you should leave it. That would be like a great art history, you know, textbook story. Like, art historians would be going through, but why is this piece signed Melissa? And then they'll have to dig through the archives and listen to this episode, and it will all become clear. You're welcome, art historians.
My favorite criticism feedback is that my signature wasn't legible enough.
What?
So now I'm super paranoid about that. I'm like, must write legibly.
What like, artist does have a legible signature? Who said that?
It was on an Etsy feedback, and I just laughed because I was like, I don't know what to say to that. That's what my signature looks like.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah. Well, that's pretty good if that's your main criticism.
Well, that was just the one that stood out to me because I was like, I don't know what to do about that. Like,
how do you handle that, actually? Do you ever, like, because you are online so much, what with the phone phobia and all, you have to be online.
I live online.
I know you do, and so do I. But, like, and, you know, when you sell a lot online and you're very active that way, how do you deal with, do you have any little internet trolls poking around?
God, not that I know of.
Oh, really? That's so nice.
I hope I don't.
I know.
But everyone does, I'm sure, so, you know.
Have you ever had any, like, comments like that where you're just sort of taken aback, or is everybody pretty nice?
Knock on wood. So far, everyone's pretty nice.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you know, my, like, comments on Jell's Curator, too, are, I'd say, 99% so nice.
Yeah, I've never seen a negative.
That's good.
Comment.
Good. Every now and then, I get one, and I get all mama bear. But,
it's hard, you know?
Yeah.
It's especially with art, because, you know, it's so completely subjective. So if someone, but, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I know there's nothing you can do. You have to just kind of roll with it. I mean, if you're happy with what you did, then great. I just get mama bears because it's not my work, and I've put somebody else's art up there. And if somebody says something nasty, and it's always like the rare time it's happened, it has been just some like troll just saying something nasty for the sake of being nasty, and I should just delete it. That's what I've started doing recently. But the mama bear in me wants to jump on there and say something.
Yeah, that's interesting because you're presenting them to the world, so you feel a little bit.
Hugely responsible.
For how they're, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm exposing them to, you know, these people that maybe not wouldn't have seen them. You know, it's just a different group of people might not have seen it. And then they're going to, if they say something mean, I just feel like, oh my God. It's horrible.
You know, was it you? I think it was you that said if there was a piece of art that everyone in the world liked, was that you?
Yeah.
Did you put that on?
Yeah.
What the crap it would be. And I love that because how true is that? Like, what a piece of crap it would be.
Yeah. I don't know what it would be.
Our job is to make everybody like it, right?
Yeah. So. It's true. And now I just delete the really mean comments that are, you can tell, are just truly mean spirited. And I just drink my Malibu and move along. And so I noticed, I think I saw them on Good Eye, on Melinda's site, Good Eye Gallery. Your beautiful abstracts.
Yeah.
And so are you...
Yeah, I started doing this a while ago. I'd have to look even what year it was, but... Yeah, I did, you know, my dad does abstract, so... Like, if I'm choosing something for myself, I will always lean towards abstract. That's what I enjoy looking at. So, again, probably I was a little intimidated to do it, because there is no, when I do my figurative pieces, I pretty much know what I want it to look like at the end, for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will fight a battle every once in a while with them, but, you know, there's a general sense of what I want it to look like. With an abstract, they're, at least for me, I don't know about other abstract painters, it's so open, you know?
Right.
That the ending is so unclear until you're there, and so it's a nice break to go back and forth between the two.
Do you have them kind of going at the same time?
Some days, I'll go back and forth. My abstracts are messy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, physically, to make them, it's just, like, ridiculously messy. So I usually have to either do it first or last and not side by side.
Because it's fabric dye, right?
It's fabric dye, but I started using, like, enamel paint, oil paint. And a ton of water. That's why I call them flood lines. I mean, it's just like gallons of water.
And how big are they?
They vary. They're usually at least 22 by 30, but I'll do big ones too. But,
well, there you go. You're doing your big ones.
Yeah. But they're kind of beasts because they're frustrating. I just, you know, it's frustrating because they're the type of pieces that Like I had one that was so amazing the other day. They're so fragile, and I just didn't hold it, didn't baby it long enough, and it just disappeared. And now it's a crumpled bit of paper in the corner. But that happens so much with those. So it's nice because I can just crumple them up in a way and throw them in the corner and start over. But it's also extremely frustrating.
Right.
So, but I like that because it keeps it interesting, you know?
Well, and it's a good lesson in not being precious.
Totally, yeah.
About things. And do you feel like, you know, like you said, with your other pieces, you kind of know where the finish line is. And with this, do you just have a sense of when you're done, or do you have that moment of like, ah, crap, should I keep going, or will that wreck it? Like, do you have that moment, or do you just get to a place where you're like, okay, oh, look at that, it's done?
Both, but yeah, I mean, I usually am like, ooh, should I keep going? I've done it a couple times, and then I ruin it. And then they're not like my other paintings where I can go back and paint over and redo.
Right.
Once I screw it up, it's done. And they're also, the less I do, the better they are. Like, it's a test in restraint, really, you know, and holding back, because simple is hard.
It is. Simple is hard, and washy is hard.
Yeah, and if I do too much, it ruins it. So it's, like, well, I'll go back and look at photos I've taken through the day, and it's all, you know, a lot of times I'm like, oh, I like this little bit where I did the least to it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I go back the next day knowing that I need to just, you know,
Have you ever chopped them up, the ones that you're not happy with, and chopped them up and done anything with the bits?
You know what? I haven't, but I did start playing the other day with scans and kind of reassembling them and chopping them up. And I was like, oh, I could do that for real. I just had that realization the other day.
It is so freeing. I've done that a few times. And you just chop them up, and suddenly they become this amazing collage that you're like, oh, I didn't even, you know, you never would have started with that kind of materials or supplies otherwise if you didn't have this crumpled guy in the corner, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You should do those and sign those, Melissa.
It's a different person. I can open a Melissa Golightly show. Yeah,
there you go. Nobody will suspect a thing. Have you ever done collage?
I've never done collage. I think when you were here for the Girl Crush, it was sort of collage-y. So I think that was my first collage experience, actually.
Oh, very interesting. Oh. Well, you know, that's funny because I love collage. I find collage really easy. I don't know. I just... So for a long time, I didn't count it as art because it was just too easy.
Mm.
And art's supposed to be a painful struggle. Or so I thought.
You're not crying and rocking in a corner.
Then you're not doing it right.
Not doing it right.
and so painting is what really, really scares me. And so I've tried and tried. And I had just had the biggest aha moment. Like just a few weeks ago, I was in there forcing myself to paint because I was like, I'm going to do it. And I hated it. Like I was not enjoying myself at all. And... No, it wasn't even that I was beating myself up over it. It was just like, this is not fun to me. And the whole time, because, you know, when you've got kids and jobs and all this stuff, you have very precious little studio time. You know, so if you've got a two-hour window, like, you know, you want to enjoy it and maximize it. And so I'd be in there. I did it for about 2 weeks, forced myself to go in and paint. And the whole time, I just kept thinking about wanting to cut things out of my thrift shop books and glue them onto other things.
That's interesting. So you kind of created this false pedestal of painting for yourself.
Yeah. And then I was like, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, forget it. So I was just like, I'm not, you know. And the moment I was like, my name is Danielle and I am a collage artist. It was the most freeing moment ever. And yeah, so that was like a huge aha moment for me. And I tried to face my fears. I guess I did. They didn't scare me anymore.
Well,
I just didn't want to do it.
Exactly. You evolve, right? And yeah.
I'm curious to see
I know your experience. I had an experience similar. I think we've talked about this. And it's probably why painting was a fear for me. In college, it was just a stupid, you know, intro to painting or 200 level or whatever it was class. that I didn't, you know, I wasn't invested in because it wasn't my major at the time. I was a photography major, so I took the painting class because I had to. So it wasn't particularly scarring, but maybe it was. But the teacher at the end of every day would take the paintings that he didn't like, which was 99% of the paintings, and throw them into a big pile in the center of the room and say, bonfire. You know, he just would, like, let's burn them all. They're crap. And I didn't do it, but I mean, I remember coming in certain days and there would be these girls just leaving in hysteric tears from the class before us. And I was just like, wow, this is an intense class.
So luckily, did you care? Did you care if he threw yours on the quote unquote bonfire?
I'm sure I cared. I mean, nobody likes to stand in a room of people and be like, your stuff is crap. Let's burn it. Right. But I knew that's not what, at the time, that's not what I was doing. That's not where my heart and soul was being put, you know?
Right. It wasn't like those painted negatives were being pulled out and thrown on the floor.
Yeah, if that had happened in that class, I would have been devastated. But,
why? Yeah. What? Why? What? Why would a prof ever think, well, here's a wonderful learning tool?
I wonder about that. And sometimes I wonder, oh, well, maybe he was like, I don't know. I think he mostly was just an asshole, but he could have. But I'm like, sometimes I'm like, well, maybe he was like, you know, if you're not ready to hear that, then you're not ready to put it out there.
Yeah.
Right?
Tough love?
Yeah.
I don't know. I the last episode I just did was with Mark Bradley Shoup, who's just the nicest guy in the world, really talented painter, but he's also a teacher at the University of Tennessee. And he just had such a nice way of, like, you know, he pushes people to do better, but he's just like, I have no need for, like, he's like, I don't want to see someone cry.
Like, yeah, and I don't think that was productive, right?
No.
I mean, because I could have applied things I'd learned in that class to my photography, but I probably didn't at the time because he was, you know, he didn't create the environment. But
yeah.
Art school's a funny thing. You could have a whole podcast about that.
I know. But, you know, it's interesting. I've talked at a lot of schools and stuff recently, and it'd be interesting, actually, if there's any students that are in art school now, comment on this post, because a lot of people I've talked to now are like, oh, no, art school's not, like, doesn't seem like that's generally the experience people are having now, that it's a lot more about experimentation and trying and trying and trying and failing and throwing it on the floor and flipping it over and trying it again and, you know, not being so precious about that final piece that you hang in the crit every Thursday and get thrown on a bonfire, that it's more about the process. A lot of people have told me that, and I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. I kind of want to go back to art school. But, I mean, it depends on your prof. Like, you're right. If he's an asshole, he's an asshole. Like, it doesn't matter the year or the school or whatever. If somebody's got a chip on their shoulder, that's the experience you're going to have, right? But yeah, if there's any students listening, I would love to hear your general view of what it's like for you right now, because I hope it's not. I hope there's no bonfires out there.
My photography professors were amazing. I never had anything like that. It was a totally different little world down
in the dark
photography.
Mm-hmm.
Down, you know, in the basement. And it was in the basement. So, but
And where did you go? You were in Arizona, weren't you?
I was at the University of Arizona in Tucson.
Well, I did. I didn't do photography till my last semester of my last year, because it was an elective and I just needed to fill it. And I was like, oh, fine, I'll do photography. I loved it. And again, yeah, you're right. Like, the profs were amazing, and the darkroom was magical. And I was like, damn it. My last semester of my last year, and I wish I discovered it sooner, because I loved it too.
I started as a minor in photography. I've always kind of slowly weeding my way into things, I think.
Do you still do photography now?
Not really. I mean, just for myself and for my family, but no.
Do you ever have the urge, or no, you're creatively taken care of?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say it wasn't challenging to me, but it just, I'd been doing it a long time. Like, when I remember being a little kid, I bought a camera, I think, with all my money in the fifth grade, like, you know, 35 millimeter, and I was like, I'm going to be a photographer. And so it kind of always was there, and I don't know, but painting just seemed bigger to me, and so I kind of avoided it.
Yeah.
Until, yeah.
Well, you're so good at it.
Really,
it's amazing that you avoided it, like, because you're just a natural.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome, Melissa.
That's what our answering machine says, because our kids think it's funny.
I know your 15-year-old doesn't want us to talk about this, but this might be the Malibu talking. Can we please say what her name is?
Oh, God, sure.
Her name is Holly Golightly. It's so awesome. And so did people her own age, like, no, did teachers say anything?
Oh, yeah. You know, we figure by the time she's this age, no one will remember that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
her
age,
no. It's just the movie that doesn't die, I guess. It's just, like, so iconic.
Yeah, it is.
And we also did, you know, we get it on a daily basis. Like, every time I go anywhere and I have to get my credit card, you go, oh, have you heard? I'm like, yes.
Yes. Familiar with it. Thank you.
Yes, I have. Yeah. Like, at least twice a day, seriously. And so we're like, you know, she's going to get it, whether that's her name or not. So.
Well, when I was at the Bedford show, I was doing the tour with the docents the day before the opening, and I was talking about your work, and they're like, is that actually her last name, or is that just, like, her art name? And I'm like, no, like, that's really her last name. I'm like, you want to know what her daughter's name is?
Well, people call me Holly all the time.
Oh, really?
They just, you know, they don't even realize they're doing it. And it's not even because of my daughter.
It's Golightly.
Have that name. Yeah, they have that name so in their head, they don't even realize they're calling me that. Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, I'm sorry. Please tell Holly I'm sorry, but I had to. It's the Malibu talking, but I had to throw it in there because it's so cool. Okay. I think that's all I have, unless you want to talk any more about The Bachelor. Are you watching Bachelor in Paradise?
Oh, my God. That show is hilarious.
So, yes, you are.
Well, it's funny because the kids walked through the other night, and I had it on. I'm like, this isn't a kid show. And they're like, what the?
I know.
Are you watching? They're like, why are they crying? They're like, what is this craziness that's on the television? It's funny, have your kids, as your son ever walked in and been like, why are you watching this?
No, because we PVR it and then we watch it after he's in bed.
But a kid sees it, they're like, what is wrong with you and why?
I know, but we do.
What is wrong with these people?
He's overheard Greg and I talking about it the next day because, you know, we like to break it down and analyze it. And so we'll be talking about it. And Charlie's only 9 and just turned 9. And he'll say, you guys should not be watching that show. It is bad for your brains.
That's what my kids are like. Just shake their heads.
I know. I'm like, I know it's bad for my brain, but I can't help it.
Yeah. Have you watched that?
Unreal?
Yeah.
Yes.
I like to watch them back to back because it's so funny. So you're like, oh, that's what's really going on.
It's so good. And I actually met a friend who will remain nameless, but I met a new friend. And we're getting to know each other over coffee and just, you know, the usual, like, where did you go to school? And like, we got introduced by a mutual friend. And so we're just chatting and then we're there for maybe 2 hours. And at the end of the coffee, she says something along, oh yeah. Well, and I was on this reality TV show a few years ago and I was like, oh, which one? And she's like, The Bachelor. And I was like, I'm going to need another latte. Because I have a lot of questions. And so she let me, and so we became good friends. And so after that, every time I saw her, I'm like, I'm sorry to go back to this, but there are still more questions. And so I asked her all this stuff, and she told me basically, like, the unreal stuff. Like, she, like, all these crazy producer stories and how it all works behind the scenes. And, oh, my gosh, I was just like a sponge, like, so much information. And then Unreal came on, and I was like, well, I don't think it's that far.
Well, no, I think the person that produces that was a producer on something.
Bachelor, I think.
Yeah, so she knows what she's...
It's so good. Okay, I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry if you're not part of the Bachelor thing, but I just had to quickly... Again, this is what happens when you have phone anxiety and then Malibu enters the picture. Okay, I'm going to stop now. That was awesome. Thank you so much for doing this. Please apologize to Holly. And I'm looking forward to your collage on Instagram.
I will do it, I promise.
Okay. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Okay, so sorry for all of the bachelor talk. It's just really hard to control my enthusiasm sometimes. Anyway, back to the art. I think that Lisa's advice about doing what scares you is just so, so great. Scary, yes, but ultimately it's going to lead to new work or realizing that certain things just aren't for you. And with that, I will say thank you to Lisa for doing something that scared her, i.e. answering my Skype call. Thanks to Saatchi for supporting the episode, and thank you so much to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next Saturday. See you then.